The Anglo-Irish Bank trial is not over. The jury of the Circuit Criminal Court continue their deliberations on the charges facing former executives Pat Whelan and William McAteer later this morning. Joining us, Dermot MacDonald, Associate Editor and Legal Editor at the Irish Independent, to discuss, Dermot, the decision the jury made yesterday in relation to Sean Fitzpatrick, that he's innocent of all charges. Now, those charges related to a time when he was chairman of the bank. There was a scheme to arrange loans to 10 people to buy shares in the bank, and we know how disastrously the story ended. So what do you see, having heard the evidence, having heard the submissions of his counsel and the judges summing up? Yeah. What was key, do you think, to that decision that he was... that he was to be cleared of all charges?
Well, if I appear uncharacteristically shy or reticent about the trial in general, it is because the trial is still live and we're still awaiting those verdicts. But if we look and hone in on Sean Fitzpatrick's involvement in the case, if we're guided by the charge of the judge to the jury, over 10 weeks of evidence, it could be argued, was confined to a phone call that lasted less than 10 minutes. We know Sean Fitzpatrick as the man who built Anglo, the man who was its CEO. But at the time of the July 2008 transaction, the so-called Maple 10 deal, he was in fact a non-executive director. He was chairman of the bank, he was a non-executive chairman, and much evidence was laid about his broad knowledge of the general scheme and there were many to try and unwind Sean Quinn's stake in the bank, a stake he'd built up of almost 30%. The jury heard there were 5 failed plans before they resorted to this particular one, but a lot honed in on the fact that he wasn't in the building day to day, he wasn't the CEO, he was the non-executive chairman. And that really that David Drum, who's not before the courts, was described as the author of the plan. And what it came down to was Sean Fitzpatrick's knowledge, what he knew or ought to have known about the transaction. And it came down to a phone call on July 9th, 2008, at around 1:30. He got a phone call from David Drum. And David Drum told him they had a solution and that they were going to lend to these 10 investors. Sean Quinn, the only evidence against him, and the judge did highlight this, that the only knowledge of the particular transaction centred on what he told the Gardaí about this July 9th phone call. And he said he asked David Drum, were they good for it? Were these people of substance? And he inquired about it, and that David Drum didn't tell him the identities of the Maple 10, that he was keeping it very tight, that he told Sean Fitzpatrick, you don't need to know the identities of these people. Now, his lawyer, Michael O'Higgins, in both the evidence and in the summing up, said there was another aspect about the recourse of the loans. And Michael O'Higgins said, well, look, my client, Sean Fitzpatrick, presumed or thought that their recourse was 100% and that the issue of recourse wasn't particularly in the mix, if it was in the mix at all, during that July 9th phone call. And he also made play of the fact that, look, David Drum was the CEO. He was the executive director. He had a duty to inform, and he didn't inform my client. So when it came down to the case of did he permit the transaction, what steps, if any, did he take to stop it, there was a lot of concentration on that fact, that really the only evidence against him was the phone call that he told Gardaí about over extensive interviews.
And that was the only record of that conversation on the phone.
On that particular, as I said, there were lots of evidence in relation to the general things. There were people who came in afterwards, evidence from several witnesses who testified that Sean Fitzpatrick appeared surprised and annoyed sometime after the deal when the recourse was 25% and not 100%, as his lawyer said he thought it was. So really what it came down to, and what the judge said, you know, he spoke generally about his broad knowledge of what was happening in 2007, 2008, over 33 board meetings at Anglo, trying to work out what they were going to do with Sean Quinn's stake. But when it came to his precise knowledge and understanding of the particular transaction that gave rise to the charges against him, he said that this phone call, the July 9th phone call, was the only knowledge Sean Fitzpatrick had of the transaction in the evidence.
And it all comes down to that, and on the basis of that, there is no connection, there was no permission, there was no knowledge on the basis of the evidence before the court.
Well, with over 10 years of working as a legal affairs journalist, I wouldn't try and conclude what ultimately the jury decided on. But I think if you look at the judge's charge, if you look at the summing up, and even if you look at the prosecution case, a lot centred, it seemed, on this particular phone call. But in any event, the jury decided it. They'd been out for over 11 and a half hours when they were given the option of majority verdicts. And when they came yesterday, shortly before 5 p.m, they were asked, at least 10 of you agreed on any counts, and the first counts came out. It was very apparent from the first not guilty what way it was going to go.
It's
against
a final
Sean Fitzpatrick.
Question, given how confident Sean Fitzpatrick was when he came out to appear before the media and not answer questions immediately afterwards, and yet we hear that he looked like a worried man earlier on.
He did. Like, I mean, a lot has been kind of talking about, you know, how he winked and how he smiled. My colleague Lise Hand talked about how his smile came out the front door of the Criminal Courts of Justice before he did. But certainly that wasn't his tenor throughout the trial. And I sat for most, but not all of the trial. And there were times where he did look very worried and he expressed the view that possibly he might be found guilty. In contrast to the beaming, smiling Shawnee that bounced out the door of the Criminal Courts of Justice, there were tears in courtroom 19 yesterday as the verdicts against him were read out. There was a lot of emotion and clear, you know, relief on his face. He was constrained, much like we are this morning, in what he could say, not least because two of his co-accused are still before the courts. The jury continues their deliberations at 10:30 this morning, and we may have an update on that later today.
Darvill, thank you.